Hi, and welcome to the Circle of Film podcast. I'm Ryan, and join me as we step into the Nutcracker and the Four Realms in today's statistics episode. We reap the wind and the sky when the sun is high. We sail the length of the seas on the ocean breeze. At night we name every star. We know where we are. That's right, The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, a movie from Disney that no one really asked for, and based on how it's doing at the box office, no one really cares about. It's the beginning of what could have been, I guess, some sort of holiday franchise thing, you know, Four Realms. There's a lot to work with there, but there's no life in this movie, and that's kind of the biggest point of contention, is there's no life. And I'll get into that, you know, as we get into some of these statistics, because it really does kind of fail at almost every stage of the film. So yeah, it's going to be not so great. Not so good for The Nutcracker and the Four Realms. A title I also do not care for. Not at all. But that aside, let's get into the statistics themselves. The Nutcracker and the Four Realms, I saw this November 4th, 2018. It's about 93 minutes long without the credits. And it's a 2018 film. I did see it in Dolby, which I guess helped from a sound perspective. You know, it did sound good, but I think it actually had a negative effect on my experience. You know, when you, the more something sticks out in a positive way, the more everything else kind of feels bad by comparison. And I think, you know, the sound, the crisp dialogue, the music, all works really well independent of anything else. And then it kind of just amplifies how bad everything else is when you're watching the movie. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I would if you're really dying to see this, I don't know if I would spring for the Dolby. Just me. My brief summary. A young girl is transported into a magical world. It is basically the plot of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, except with one girl instead of two girls and two boys. You have... She goes into a room in her godfather's house and disappears and comes out the other side in an unknown and strange magical world. And that's it. That's kind of all we get from this new world. And unlike The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, it's just, you know, there's no story. The characters are completely flat and two-dimensional, and so you're not invested in anything. You don't care about anything. Because the vast majority of the characters that we meet before we transfer over into the magical world don't even come with us. And so we have... So any of the established relationships that they give us early on fall apart. And then everyone that's in the magical world is two-dimensional and paper. And you know, you see them for 20 seconds in some instances, as we'll get to, and it's just all over, it's just really not a good movie. So I gave this 21. 24 is my counting down, is my awful, quote unquote awful threshold, so it passed that at 21. It's really, really something. It puts it on par with Book Club from this year, as well as 12 Strong. 12 strong. Not great. Not great. It has a 35% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is also pretty bad. Not quite as bad, but for Disney, very, very bad. And let me see. It might have actually changed given, you know, new release. Nope. Still at a 35 as of this recording. So, let's move on to the director, shall we? Because there's actually fun facts about that. So, Lasse Hallström, original director of the film, did not finish. There was problems with the movie and whatever he was doing. I think it was related to the budget. And he was pulled, ultimately, from the film. And replaced by Joe Johnston. So both of these guys are pretty big names as directors in and of themselves. They've both made a lot of big movies. They've both been very successful on that front. And it's frustrating, you know, that I like a lot of movies that they've both done. So looking at their history here, you know, Lasse Hallström is Swedish. He made The Cider House Rules, What's Eating Gilbert Grape, Chocolat. He also did Hachi, A Dog's Tale, which I didn't particularly like, but a lot of people do. He did last year's A Dog's Purpose. So, you know, maybe not my favorite director by any stretch, but between The Cider House Rules and What's Eating Gilbert Grape, he has made movies that I've enjoyed. Salmon Fishing in the Yemen is solid, is okay. So, you know, not the worst. He's better than this. He's better than this, I'll say that. Joe Johnston, on the other hand, he did the first Captain America, The Rocketeer, October Sky, Hidalgo, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. You know, he's done a lot of strong films, solid films. He did the original Jumanji. And this is, you know, should be right up his alley, you know. He's familiar with this kind of story, you know, something like Jumanji, where you have this other world that interacts with the real world in a way. You know, Jurassic Park 3, which is not the best, but it's still dealing with, we have a reality that we know, and then we're adding something else to it. And so, you know, he has that, he's not, I feel like if he had been the only director on this, he probably could have made it better. And I think that it's simply the fact that two people were working on this at separate points in time, presumably with different visions, really grated against the final product. Lasse Hallström currently on IMDb does not have anything announced after this, whereas Joe Johnston has been announced to direct the next Chronicles of Narnia film, The Silver Chair, which, you know, like I said, Nutcracker and the Four Realms is basically just Chronicles of Narnia, but stripped down. So, that said, Joe Johnston, as a director, this is the sixth film of his I've seen. It drops his average film rating to a 56.83. It is his second film, rated between 0 and 24, and fifth best movie overall, coming in behind Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, and ahead of The Wolfman. He has a value of 0.5, a score of 43.13, and is ranked 335th overall, one spot behind Tony Scott, director of Crimson Tide, Man on Fire, Enemy of the State, and True Romance, and one spot ahead of Penny Marshall, who directed Big, A League of Their Own, and Awakenings, as well as Lasse Hallström, who this is his 10th film credit that I've seen. It drops his average film rating to a 49.5. It is his second film, rated between 0 and 24, and ninth best movie overall, coming in behind Casanova and ahead of A Dog's Purpose. He has a value of negative 3.5, a score of 37.75, and is ranked 483rd overall, tied with Paddy Considine, who directed Tyrannosaur, Hellstrom is one spot behind Glenn Ficarra and John Requa, who directed Crazy Stupid Love, Focus, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. And Hellstrom is one spot ahead of John Dugan, who directed The Year My Voice Broke and The Parole Officer. And outside of the production and timeline aspect of the direction and how the two directors didn't really mesh well in the final product, at least as it seems to me, the direction of the film itself, even on an individual scene-to-scene basis, it's very short, and reports are that it was slashed quite substantially down to the little over 90 minutes that it is, which is not good. Like, there's no room for character development. Everything... What's fascinating is that despite the fact that the characters have no personalities for the most part, I could still see their actions coming a mile away. You know, it's a very, as soon as our lead character Clara gets the egg, this egg for Christmas, you know exactly what it is. And I think if you've seen, you know, the few dozen movies that are similar to this movie, you know that, and you understand, you know, okay, well, it's a locked thing. Obviously, it has to be unlocked. You can't have a locked thing and not unlock it later on. But more than that, it comes with a note, and it's the kind of thing where the character doesn't understand what the note means, but it's blatantly obvious to the viewer from the jump. So the viewer watching this think, oh, I know exactly what this means. I know exactly what's going to happen. And now I have to watch, you know, an hour and 10 minutes of this movie waiting for that moment to finally arrive, because it's not going to happen in, you know, 5 minutes. And it just kind of destroys the illusion, as it were. Moving on to the writing. A couple of different writers credited here. All of them, the first time they've made my list. Ashley Powell, E.T.A. Hoffman, and Marius Petipa. E.T.A. Hoffman and Marius Petipa are credited as providing inspiration for the film as writers of stories about the Nutcracker. So E.T.A. Hoffman wrote the short story The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, and Marius Petipa wrote the Nutcracker Ballet, while Ashley Powell did the screen story and screenplay. All three of them, only film, rated a 21, score a value of -2, a score of 5, and a rank of 6,558, which puts them ahead of Christian Gudegast, who wrote Den of Thieves and London Has Fallen, and puts them behind, let's go with Alexander Key, who wrote Race to Witch Mountain. And the writing in this is simple. I think that's the best way to describe it. It's very simple. Outside of the plot progression and the direction that we are steered throughout the story, the dialogue is just uninspired, and it leads you, it feels exactly the way a lot of the plot devices do, as if, you know, it's kind of just transposed directly from other movies that I'd seen before. And there are moments where it, you know, even the actors look like they can't really deliver the dialogue properly, because it just doesn't mesh or gel with, human nature. I don't know. It's really stilted and not enjoyable. Not enjoyable in the least. So, yeah. This is another not so good aspect. Not so good. But let's move on to the actors. And really, this is where it deteriorates even further. So, start out with Keira Knightley. This is her 36th film I've seen. It drops her average film rating to a 52.44. It is her 6th film, rated between 0 and 24, and 34th film overall. Coming in behind Red Nose Day, actually, and ahead of Deflation. It has her drops her value to a negative 4, her score to a 45.68, and she is ranked 1,844th overall. One spot behind Cody Horn, who was in End of Watch and Magic Mike, and one spot ahead of Beau Bridges. Now, Keira Knightley plays the Sugar Plum Fairy. And by all accounts, is easily the best performance in the movie. It starts out a little grating. She has this very Moaning Myrtle voice in the first half of the movie. But then as it progresses, especially in the third act of the film, that sort of disappears, and she really goes for broke with the final act of the film. She's very over the top, really chewing the scenery, and it really does work for her at the end. Maybe the only positive about the movie I feel capable of complimenting. You know, she does what she can, and it's nice. Sugar Plum Fairy is so I guess to set up the hierarchy in this world, our main character, Clara's mom, was the queen of the four realms, and Clara kind of enters the picture when there is this sort of vacuum of power, and we have, you know, four realms. One of those realms is... And at war is probably not the right term, but on the outs with the other three, Keira Knightley as the Sugar Plum Fairy is one of those three, and they are hoping to, with Clara's help, protect the kingdom and the greater realms from this fourth outlawed realm. And that's kind of the general idea, is Clara goes in with her own idea of what she wants to get out of this, and she stumbles into this greater conflict, you know, just like Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. And she has to follow through. You know, it turns out that the thing that she wants and the thing that they need to protect them in this magical world is the same. Same thing, same objective. So that makes it really easy. And so Keira Knightley as the Sugar Plum Fairy is just kind of sitting there like, hey, it'd be really great if you could help us with this. And she said, okay. And that's about it. That's kind of the gist. All right, moving on. We have Richard E. Grant. This is the 16th film of his I've seen. It drops his average film rating to a 53.75. It's his second film, rated between 0 and 24, and 15th best movie. Overall, coming in behind Dom Hemingway and ahead of a voice role in Zambezia. Drops his value to a negative 2.5, his score to a 45.28, and he is ranked 1,879th overall. Tied with Elle Fanning, one spot behind Verna Bloom, and one spot ahead of Virginia Madsen. Richard E. Grant plays the role of Shiver. Shiver is one of... So, Keira Knightley, as a Sugar Plum Fairy, presides over one of the four realms. Richard E. Grant, as Shiver, presides over a second of the four realms. And he has, I think, two scenes in the whole movie, and only really gets dialogue in one of them. So, utterly wasted. Utterly wasted. Presumably, he and the other of the three leaders of those realms, their scenes were slashed completely to hell. But, you know, he is there. You know, I'm very excited to see him in Can You Ever Forgive Me? He's gotten tons of buzz for that role. And this is... It's unfortunate that this movie came out the same year, because you wouldn't even know that he had any talent as an actor. He's under, you know, he's in costume and under heavy, heavy makeup and everything the whole time he's in this movie, which is, you know, about 3 or 4 minutes. Richard E. Grant. Great. Next up is Morgan Freeman. This is the 46th film of his I've seen. It drops his average for me to a 50.87. It's the 9th film of his rated between 0 and 24 and 39th best movie overall, coming in behind Thick as Thieves and ahead of The Big Bounce. It drops his value to a negative 7, his score to a 41.75, and he is ranked 2,353rd overall. Tied with Amaya Miller, one spot behind Lolita Davidovich, and one spot ahead of Faye Dunaway. Amaya Miller, who was in War for the Planet of the Apes and Lights Out. Lolita Davidovich, who was in Gods and Monsters and Leap of Faith. And, of course, Faye Dunaway. Morgan Freeman plays the role of Drosselmeyer. He is the godfather of our main character, Clara. He is a tinkerer and adventurer, and there's a scene early on, very early in the movie, where Clara goes to talk to him, and she says she needs his help with something, and before the plot can continue, we get this sequence where Morgan Freeman kind of pretends like he needs her help. He has a toy that is moving backwards, and he doesn't know how to fix it, or so he says. And so Clara fixes it, and it's all good. Now, the scene is presented and shot in a way where it makes it pretty obvious, at least to me, that Morgan Freeman definitely could have fixed this toy, but was kind of using this as a way to maybe assess Clara's ability to fix things or to work with mechanical objects. Her mother was a very, very good and talented inventor. But I don't know, it felt very strange that we paused the movie for this, because as a viewer, at this point, you already realize that she's very talented with mechanical objects. So I don't know what this scene gave us exactly. Anyway, Morgan Freeman, they're at his house most of the film, as the rapper of the film in the real world. And one of the sequences actually really found interesting. He kind of appears at the party and he says, "It's my favorite time to give away the gifts." And all the kids rush out into the garden, I guess, and there's this giant pole with a ton of strings coming down from it. And once the string kind of gets around eye level, there's a little tag attached to each string, and each tag has a name written on it. And so the kids go out and they search for the tag with their name, and then you follow the string as it, you know, it wraps around things and goes back in the house and over the, you know, up the stairs and down the hallway and through the kitchen and all this all over the place until it gets you to your present. I thought that was really neat. We don't spend too much time on this brief thing, but I thought that was kind of neat the way that worked out. But otherwise, you know, once we get into the magical world, Morgan Freeman goes away. We see him one more time at the end, but he's just, I don't know, he's just here to add his name to the poster, I guess. Next up is Matthew McFadden. This is the 9th film credit of his. Drops his average for Wayne to a 53.11. It is his second film, rated between 0 and 24, and 8th best movie overall, coming in behind Robin Hood and ahead of The Three Musketeers. He has a value of -2, a score of 41.45, and is ranked 2,402nd, overall, one spot behind Colin Hanks and one spot ahead of Eugene Lipinski. Matthew McFadden plays Mr. Stahlbaum. He is the father of Clara. And he doesn't get much to do, but his role in the movie is pretty simple. He, the mother of the family and his wife has died relatively recently. So Clara is in a state, as well as Mr. Stahlbaum is kind of in a fix. And the conflict between him and Clara is she is a very independent girl. She wants to do what she wants to do. And his opinion is, well, we gotta put on this appearance. You know, we gotta keep up appearances. We gotta do the things that we're expected to do. And Clara's like, nah. And I like that. It's something I've seen in a lot of movies, but up until the resolution of this conflict, I was like, cool. I'm okay with this. But like so many of these conflicts, the resolution is kind of the kid always conceding to the adult that I don't really want to do such and such a thing. You are telling me I need to just because it's a thing I'm supposed to do. And the kid is being made out to seem like the selfish person that only wants to get what they want, when the adult is generally in the exact same position, you know, being selfish, and yet just because they are the adult, they end up getting their way, and that always frustrates me in a movie. So Matthew McFadden, also just like Morgan Freeman, like one and a half scenes beginning of the movie, and a scene at the end. So hardly involved. Next up is our lead character, Mackenzie Foy. This is the sixth film credit of hers I've seen. Drops her average film rating to a 54.33. It is her only film rated between 0 and 24 and worst film overall, coming in behind The Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 1. That's right. Worse than Twilight, Breaking Dawn Part 1. She has a value of negative 0.5, a score of 40.25, and is ranked 2,581st overall, tied with Natalie Dormer and Nicole Scherzinger. She is one spot behind Ken Marino and one spot ahead of Christopher Lloyd. So, as the lead character, Clara, she is a strong, independent woman. She is good with her hands. She is a very confident and talented person. She knows how things work. She can fix things and create things, and all that is wonderful. All that is great. And that's it. I mean, she doesn't really change throughout the movie. It's not as though she comes to a realization. She doesn't evolve. She doesn't grow. She just kind of, like I said, the locked thing that she receives in the beginning, eventually it has to open, and she figures out what it really means, and that's it. That's about it. That is all the character development that she gets, and that's not quite enough. She's in every scene from start to finish of the film, and yet I feel like I still barely know her at the end of it. I think Mackenzie Foy is fine as an actor. You know, I've seen her in, let's see, The Conjuring, The Little Prince, and she was in Interstellar. She was young Jessica Chastain in Interstellar, I believe. She's good. I mean, she's definitely talented, and you know, maybe it might be that you know, the pivotal scenes that were cut. I don't know why they would cut scenes like that, but could have happened. I don't know. Mackenzie Foy as Clara. It's fine. Whatever. Moving on. Next up, who we got? Next up is Helen Mirren. Another big name in this movie. This is her 34th film credit and drops her average film rating to a 47.15. It is her 8th film, rated between 0 and 24, and 29th best movie overall, coming in behind Brighton Rock and ahead of her voice role in The Snow Queen. She has a value of negative 16, a score of 28.53, and is ranked 3,868th overall, one spot behind Dee Bradley Baker and one spot ahead of Taraji P. Henson. Helen Mirren plays the role of Mother Ginger. She is another of the leaders of one of the realms. She leads the realm that has been ostracized, the antagonist, as it were. And she actually has a decent amount of screen time in this movie. She gets to do real things, and that's good. I think Helen Mirren is, I mean, how old is she now? She's about 73 in this movie. Well, I don't know, maybe 72, 73 from the filming of this movie. And she is still just a total badass. There's kind of an unexplainable action sequence in this movie with Helen Mirren and Mackenzie Foy as Clara. And it's really odd because Helen Mirren, as I said, 72, 73 years old. Mackenzie Foy is barely 18. Neither of them have the appearance of action people. And yet they are in this action sequence that is kind of exaggerated, and it's a magical world, so you take that for what it is, but I don't know. Helen Mirren still got it. Definitely second best in show behind Keira Knightley for me. She... I don't know. I don't want to say too much to spoil anything, but Helen Mirren, she's fine. She's fine. I think it's more I respect her as just a human than I do like her character, for what that's worth. Moving on. Ellie Bamber. This is the third film credit of hers. It drops her average film rating to a 41. It is her only film rated between 0 and 24 and worst film overall, coming in behind Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Like Bomber has a value of negative 2.5, a score of 22.1, and is ranked 4,325th overall. She plays the role of Louise, who is Clara's sister, I believe. Like Morgan Freeman, like Matthew McFadden, and probably to an even greater extent, she has a scene at the beginning, and you really barely see her at the end anyway. There's very few speaking lines, so she is kind of just there. She was also in Nocturnal Animals the other year. And I think this is the last person. Eugenio Derbez. This is the seventh film of his I've seen. It drops his average film rating to a 26.14. It is his fourth film, right between 0 and 24, and fourth best movie overall, coming in behind Sandy Wexler and ahead of Overboard. He has a value of negative 9, a score of 11.33, and is ranked 4,705th overall. One spot behind Jason Momoa, and one spot ahead of Marissa Coughlin. Marissa Coughlin, who is in Super Troopers and Super Troopers 2, Freddy Got Fingered, and Teaching Mrs. Tingle. Derbez plays the role of Hawthorne. He is the last of the four realm leaders that I haven't mentioned yet. He is one of the three, along with Richard E. Grant and Keira Knightley, who are defending the kingdom. And as well as with Richard E. Grant, he gets very few scenes, very little screen time, very few lines. And you wouldn't know... I don't know. I wouldn't say that Eugenio Derbez is a good actor, but you couldn't tell from this movie because... Again, he's stuck behind makeup and costumes the entire 3 to 4 minutes of screen time that he has. So there's not a lot to really get into because they don't give them any chance. And that is all of the actors that matter as far as this movie is concerned. There is another, who is it? I guess it's Jaden Fawara Knight, who plays Philip, who is the Nutcracker, the titular Nutcracker of the movie. And it's only the only movie I've seen him in. He is very, very inexperienced as an actor, and it really shows. That's all I'll say about him. Moving on to genre. The Nutcracker in the Four Realms is an adventure fantasy movie. Dropping the average rating of adventure movies to 50.92 and fantasy to 51.7. The adventure side of things, you know, like I said, Clara enters this magical world. She goes on a... She's trying to find the key to the thing that's locked. And along the way, she encounters Nutcracker Guy, all these... the leaders of these realms. She encounters Mice and the Mouse King, as well as Helen Mirren's character in that whole situation. And things like that. I mean, I guess it's an adventure. There's adventure elements. It's not... It has them. And obviously, fantasy. The effects. Like, talking about... Look at... There's... Early on in the film, when we're introduced to the leaders of these realms with Keira Knightley and Eugene Odorbez and Richard E. Grant, man, the green screen is real bad in those scenes. The effects are really awful. There's a sequence where Keira Knightley flies, and it's kind of painful to watch. I can't remember seeing this in over a decade, but in animated movies where you would know what stone is going to crumble because it's animated differently, that's what it felt like. And it was rough. It's real rough. Tough watch. It does have a 3 on the Bechdel test. A lot of female characters, to its credit. Helen Mirren, Keira Knightley, Mackenzie Foy. So, I don't know. I guess that's fine. And it's rated PG. So, PG. Doesn't make any of my best lists. Not going to make the Circle of Film Awards either. It is the 245th film I have seen released in 2018. It is one of the 1,657 films I have seen this calendar year. It decreases the average film rating of 2018 films to 42.27. It decreases their tomato meter average to 60.28. And it is the 38th adventure film and 30th fantasy film. It is... Oh, wait, hold on a second. So that I can... The formulas are very, very sensitive. So let me adjust this here. Awesome. It is a bad film. Awful, but bad film. It is the 142nd bad film I have seen from 2018. And makes the ratio of good to bad films 0.46. So a little under 1 to 2 at the moment. Right now. As a 3 on the Bechdel test, it is part of the 53.69% of films that have that 3. Which is heads and shoulders the best percentage of any year. Very few years have greater than 40% of their films as a 3 on the Bechdel test. But 2018, greater than 50. Obviously not a real mark of feminism and equality necessarily, but progress, definitely progress. As a PG film. It is the 27th PG film I have seen this year. And, yeah, that's it. Moving on to rating. I said it. I gave it a 21. It is the 63rd film I have given that score to at the moment. I mentioned the other ones from this year that got that score. If we go back to 2017, films that got a 21 include Crooked House, Snatched, Eddie's Life Coach, which is a short film related to the animated film Sing, and Puppy, which is a short film related to Hotel Transylvania 2. Back at 2018, films that are in that vicinity, a 22, I gave that to Mute, and Hotel Transylvania 3, both got a 22, and a 20, I gave that to The Little Stranger, Goosebumps 2, and Insidious, The Last Key. That's it for The Nutcracker and The Four Realms. It looks like it's going to bomb pretty hard, and it looks like it'll be a net loss for Disney, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately. Unfortunately from a I want everyone to do well standpoint, but not unfortunately from a this movie doesn't deserve to make any money standpoint. That's it. I don't recommend it, but I guess one thing, I guess, before I finish this episode, the movie ended and there was a group of older teens, I think, down in front of me, three or four rows in front of me. And as soon as the credits began to roll, there's four or five people there in this group and they burst out cheering, just very loud applause, cheering. And I'm listening to them, and I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop and to hear them start to kind of laugh as if it's a joke, you know, because based on what I just saw, I don't know who you know, loves this movie. And it was almost exactly like the spinning top at the end of Inception. I thought I could hear a little bit of laughter, but nothing significant enough to really indicate that I was correct, that they were just kind of mocking the film. So I kind of left thinking maybe they did like it, because I didn't obviously talk to them. I didn't ask them, but it's just this very strange occurrence of maybe they did like it. I don't know. There might be. Maybe it was kind of a this was so bad it was fun type of thing. Who can say? But that being said, I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode. I appreciate it. And now the outro, courtesy of Meg Berquist.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you would like to listen to more episodes, you can find this podcast at circleoffilm.com or on iTunes. Don't forget to rate and review. If you'd like to follow Ryan on Twitter, you can find him at Circle of Film or contact him through email at circleoffilm@gmail.com. You can also support the show at patreon.com/circleoffilm for as little as 8 cents an episode. Thank you again for listening and have a week.
So long, farewell, I'll be to say goodnight.
I know she'll never leave me, even as she fades from view.
Wait a minute.